This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Beyond mid-October already, so certainly you've put away your trowel and garden gloves by now. Well, apparently only someone like me who doesn't know nearly enough about the heart of a true gardener would think the season over. Luckily, this hour's guests know much better. Organic farmer Dave O'Neill and organic gardening consultant Guinevere Higgins are here to tell us just how much can be accomplished in autumn in the garden. All manner of vegetables still growing, preparations for the coming spring, and even what you could be planting soon for a winter garden. Just some of the advice they'll have for us. As always, they'll take listener questions, too, about any gardening topic for any time of year. Of course, whenever Dave and Guinevere are on hand, the phone lines tend to fill up fast, so you might want to get your call in early at 888-WMRA-TALK. The Green Thumb Consulting begins right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. We are talking once again about digging in the dirt. So if you've got questions about growing stuff or have some green thumb success stories you'd like to share, you're invited to join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook at WMRA's Virginia Insight. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the Insight Studios our perennial gardening advisors from the Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest in Charlottesville, Guinevere Higgins, and from the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keezeltown, Dave O'Neill. Mr. O'Neill, Ms. Higgins, great to see you again.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Back. Thank you.
So this time of year, what's hot?
Well, in our garden, we're doing cover crop. Cover crop is something that we sow that we don't harvest. So we're specifically sowing cover crop to cover for the winter and to feed the soil, to grow soil, basically. And when we cover crop, we want to select a variety of things to give the soil a well-rounded kind of diet. So we select grain crops and legume crops. Grains, one of our favorites is annual ryegrass, gets 5 feet tall. One rye plant has up to 3 miles of root hairs. So that's all organic matter.
How do you know that?
I measure.
Did you track one?
Yes, I measure. That's one of the reported benefits of it is it has that much organic matter in one plant.
And, wow.
And then we sow legumes. So legumes are the pea or the bean family, and we usually use a combination of vetch or Austrian winter pea or clover. And those are nitrogen-fixing plants. Basically, they can take nitrogen out of the atmosphere and get it into the soil by way of a beneficial relationship with mycorrhizal fungi. So cover crop is a great fall gardening technique, and it's a great year-round strategy. It protects the soil from erosion, and it builds soil for next year's garden.
So if somebody wants to prepare their soil or improve their soil for springtime, they could be planting things like ryegrass mm-hmm. and...
Ryegrass, vetch, Austrian winter pea.
You tell me that clover was actually a legume?
Yes, clover is a legume.
Are you sure of that?
Impossible.
Well, Guinevere is nodding, so I guess the two of you agree.
You're outnumbered.
You're outnumbered, Dave. Sorry. And I would also add that now is a fantastic time to think about planting your garlic for next summer's harvest. Garlic grows all winter long. And it's, who doesn't love garlic? At stores, you can use it in almost any recipe. And it is a bulb. So you plant it in the fall, just like you'd plant your tulips or your daffodils. It's one of the most low-maintenance crops to grow, I think. There's not a whole lot of issues with it. You can end up with some rot or some fungus if it's really wet, and we had some of that last year because it was so wet last spring. But basically, you put it in the ground, and if you there's two different varieties of garlic, sort of classes of garlic, hard-net garlic and soft-net garlic. If you grow hard-net garlic in, May, you'll end up harvesting the garlic scapes, which are the flower stalks of the garlic, and you can use those like you would use garlic. And it's sort of a little pre-garlic treat. And then
You cut up the flower and
You actually want to pull off that flower stalk because you want to tell the bulb, hey, don't make a flower. We don't want you to make a flower. We want these nice juicy bulbs.
So you pull off the stalk.
And that kind of tells the plant, like, all right, well, I guess I'm not going to reproduce this year. So I'm going to keep putting energy into my bulbs, which is, of course, what we grow the garlic for. So, but you can still eat those stalks and they're delicious. They're fantastic. You can saute them up like asparagus and they're just so good. And then come usually early to mid-June, you've got your garlic harvest and you let it cure, you let it dry, and then you've got garlic for potentially all year long if you pick some varieties that store well.
We do have a couple of postings on Facebook that came in early, and I'll get to those in a few moments. But I just want to postulate, because you two know well by now, that every other time that you have been here, early spring, late spring, hottest days of summer, the phone lines have run off the hook with people who either want to share their gardening stories, some, you know, hard-won success that they finally determined about what would work that took years to figure out, or some question that they've been dealing with forever and they're looking for good advice. But this is the first time we've ever tried doing a gardening show in the fall. And it's completely possible that there are people listening who go, oh no, I'm just done with gardening. I'm too tired. I've made it through October. However, if anybody does have a gardening question, either about something that you experienced earlier in the year and you want to know how to avoid next year, or a success story, or what to do with a winter garden, the phone lines are open at 888-967-2825. That's 888-WMRA-TALK. We understand, Dave O'Neill, that you gained some new fame recently. There's a book there in front of you that I understand says something about you and the Radical Roots Community Farm.
Sure. This new book by Tanya Denkel-Lacob just came out, Reclaiming Our Food, How the Grassroots Food Movement is Changing the Way We Eat. And it's a great nationwide survey of kind of the premier local food movement, what's going on in the nation and how this movement is really transforming where our food comes from and how we eat.
And the author's first name is Tanya, and her last name is Cobb, C-O-B-B. And she's from Charlottesville?
Yep, she is.
She is. And if anyone is interested in hearing Tanya talk about the book and maybe do some reading from the book, there is going to be an event in Charlottesville on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock at The Haven at First and Market. It's actually part of a nationwide celebration of Food Day, which is events going on across the country to kind of appreciate food, talk about food, and gather community around food. And so there's going to be a potluck dinner, so bring a dish to share. The event starts at 6 o'clock, and Tanya will be doing a reading and giving a presentation about this book, which looks, it's fresh off the presses, so it looks great. This is the first time I've had a chance to look through it.
Well, if anybody wants to talk about the local food movement or anything else related to food and gardening, we'd be happy to have your questions or comments as well at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825, here with gardening advisors Guinevere Higgins and Dave O'Neill. This first question that came in on Facebook a few minutes ago is from Elizabeth, who says, please, some advice about weed trees, wild cherries, sumac, mulberries, also poison ivy. I wish I had some sort of injectable poison to kill just those items. They get so deep, so fast, it's difficult to dig them up. And if you cut them, they just come right back. I think that story about George Washington and the cherry tree is actually just political spin. Anyone who has ever had property in Virginia knows that he was trying to score points with Dad by cutting down the weed tree.
Maybe.
It's certainly true. I know I've battled a few of those myself.
Mulberries.
For sure. They are the worst. And one of my least favorites, mimosa. That is such a weedy tree. I mean, aside from sticking on them and trying to get them when they're small and using your pitchfork to dig them up, I don't really know what to say. I mean, we are organic gardeners. We're not going to recommend that she go out and spray something on them. And I don't know that any of the sort of more organic remedies like salt water or vinegar water would work on a little tree seedling like that the way it would work on crabgrass or something else.
And I've heard super strong salt right as it's cut can be effective. You know, salt, diluted salt water solution, when you cut the cambium layer, that tree's going to absorb it. Possibly, you know, it's an organic approach worth trying.
Give it a shot.
Keep your felcos handy and
yeah, or just keep cutting them. Keep cutting them, or you know, if you prefer digging them up.
It's the first time I've heard either of you mention salt water or vinegar water as a possible solution, even if it's not for weed trees. But so tell me more about that.
Well, it's just a great, you know, if you know, in our culture, we tend to like to, you know, spray something on a plant we don't like to make it go away. And that's kind of been the dominant paradigm here for a while. So kind of keeping in that mode, but wanting to use something that's less toxic than a Roundup or another kind of herbicide, you know, a diluted saltwater solution or a diluted vinegar solution can, you know, provide the same end result, which means, you know, that weed is dead with a little less toxicity involved.
And always thinking from a design approach, those trees are trying to fill a niche. So they're, you know, there's sunlight they're trying to gather. There's some kind of niche there. So you can try to outcompete them with more dense planting. You can also think, well, how is this weed tree? You know, it's only weed by our definition. It's a volunteer tree. What uses could it be?
Volunteer tree?
Yeah, that's another word
another
for
term.
Weed.
Like dandelions are volunteer plants.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
But, you know, goats, they eat fodder. 75% of their diet can be fodder, meaning weedy trees.
Poison ivy.
Yes.
Blackberry. Multiflora rose.
That's all great goat food.
Yeah, goats are salivating right now, hearing me say that.
Poison ivy, although Elizabeth mentioned it, it's not really considered a tree, is it?
Well, it gets as big as a tree sometimes.
Sometimes,
it's
just as pernicious, you know. It's just as hard to eradicate sometimes.
And we don't like poison ivy, but, you know, over 60 species of native birds and small mammals eat the berries.
Yeah.
So it's part of our ecology. It's
and the same
stay.
Thing with those pesky cherry trees. Prunus, the species Prunus, actually provides a huge number of, or supports a huge number of native birds and caterpillars and things that we all enjoy looking at, and those things have to eat.
That's what George Washington actually cut down, was called Prunus?
Well, that's the scientific name.
Okay. Well, we're actually getting some other postings now on Facebook, but let me note that everything we get on Facebook means the host of the show reading it and boring you more and more with the sound of his voice. So if you would be willing to share your voice with us with a question or comment, all of our phone lines are open now at 888-WMRA-TALK, 1-888-967-2825. And Dave O'Neill, before I go on to this next Facebook post, you said something in response to Elizabeth's concern about so-called weed trees, about more dense planting. And it occurred to me I ought to ask you a little bit more about that.
I was just thinking from a design perspective, there's a niche there that the volunteer tree is trying to occupy. So, you know, if a space or a garden area is using all of the available sunlight, there's going to be a lot less weed pressure.
So is there some particular kind of plant that you would perhaps encourage the weed trees to stay away if you planted this particular plant where the weed trees used to grow?
In general, I always recommend vertical stacking of gardens. So we can get a lot more production into our food gardens if we think vertically. So that means using fruit trees in the garden, but maybe super dwarf fruit trees that are heavily pruned so that they don't shade out the other sun-loving lower vegetable crops. So kind of using more vertical space, lots of small fruit trees and vines, and then the low herbaceous level crops. Thinking
herbaceous level?
Herbaceous, like basil.
Herb crops. Okay.
Yeah, whatever your favorite herbs are.
Non-woody plants.
Yeah.
Any other suggestions, Guinevere, for densifying?
I mean, the other thing I would say is just heavy mulch. That can be helpful as far as, you know, helping ensure that weeds won't germinate or the weed seeds won't germinate as rapidly. But
well, yeah, Kristen here on Facebook has a terrific question. Simple, short, to the point. What veggies can I plant in the garden now? But as you can tell from the music that's playing, we don't have time for your answer until after
Stay
we
tuned.
Get back from the break. So
what a
we'll address that question. And Geneva and Harrisonburg will also get to your call in a bit more than 1 minute. Organic gardening specialist David O'Neill is co-owner of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keezletown. Organic gardening specialist Guinevere Higgins is co-owner of the Charlottesville-based gardening consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Want to take a shot at Kristen's question on Facebook? What veggies can she plant in the garden now?
All right. So it's getting to be a little late for winter, fall and winter production, but certainly garlic, absolutely not too late for that. And we've got until, you know, into the first few weeks of November, even into December, if you're desperate and it's been a mild fall, you can definitely get your garlic in. As far as starting things from seed, your only options are really cold hardy lettuces such as Winter Density or Red Sails, and those are two specific varieties. Spinach you might be able to get a crop out of, or if you're lucky and you can find some seedlings at your local nursery, perhaps at the farmer's market, you can get plants in the ground, cold hardy plants in the ground like broccoli, kale, Swiss chard. Chances are you're not going to be able to harvest them until sometime late winter or early spring. But there's no reason why you can't go ahead and get them in the ground, and then you're just going to be that much further along come spring.
In the garden, we're always thinking ahead. So a lot of our crops are 90 days till mature. So that means we want to be thinking about our winter garden in July and August, what we're seeding, what we're planning on harvesting. Because basically we want to get most of those crops, all our broccolis, cabbages, turnips, carrots, we want to get them about 90% mature, 80% mature on the first frost date, which the average first frost date here in the valley is October 10th. So we haven't gotten it yet, so we're still clear. But we want to get most of those winter hardy crops fairly mature by mid-October.
And if you were smart and you were planning ahead and your timing was impeccable and you've gotten your winter garden planted, that's awesome. But you definitely want to start thinking about how you're going to...
You were looking at me while you were saying all those things. I got to take it that you're thinking there's somebody in the audience who qualifies, because you know
that. I'm sure someone out there is so on top of it. And I can't look at myself in this regard, unfortunately, because we've been busy. But if you've gotten all your winter hardy plants in... you need to start thinking now about how you're going to protect them when we do, at some point, I don't know when that's going to happen, but at some point, I assume we're going to get some cold weather. And so you want to think about getting yourself prepared with row cover and potentially a cold frame. And those are just two pretty easy methods of ensuring that your plants are going to have just a little bit additional warmth that's going to keep them going through the winter.
If I forget, with all the calls that we now have tying up the lines, please remind me to ask you more about that. But I don't want to make these people who are on hold wait too long. And if you are trying to reach us right now at 888-WMRA-TALK because you either have a gardening question or a gardening success story to share and you're getting a busy signal, please do call back in a few minutes. Geneva in Harrisonburg, I apologize for mispronouncing your name just before the break. But this now I'm not calling you Geneva anymore. Now I'm calling you Geneva. And that's correct, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so your question or comment for Dave O'Neill and or Guinevere Higgins, please.
I just wanted to comment. I wanted to thank Dave and his wife, Lee, for the role that they've played in our community here in Harrisonburg. Wow. I had a CSA share with you all, I think it was 4 years ago now.
Uh-huh. Geneva, do you want to go ahead and explain what CSA means in case...
Community-supported agriculture, you... buy pretty much a stock or a share in a local farm so that you participate in the risks and the benefits of the local farms. You help support them, and in return, you get a fresh basket of vegetables, depending on what it is you sign up for. Sometimes it's eggs, sometimes it's fruit. But every week you get this basket delivered, and you can participate that way in the local food movement.
So I apologize. I interrupted you talking about how wonderful Dave is just to get an explanation.
Well, so we got the CSA share, probably, I think it was 4 years ago, and just really fell in love. I mean, there were so many vegetables. I think that I grew up eating pretty healthy, but there were so many things that I hadn't been introduced to, and just realized how much I loved good food. And from that point, we decided to have a garden at our local church. We had a lot at our church, so we did a garden there with some friends. And then the past 2 years, we've had gardens in our home, and now I have two young sons who are avid weeders, and I think they eat more vegetables directly out of the garden than they even do on their plates.
That's great.
They are total tomato snobs. They want their tomatoes to be warmed by the sun because we're used to eating them directly out of the garden. So I just, like, you all have played a really large role in my family's love for food and supporting local agriculture, and I just wanted to thank you guys.
Well, Geneva, thank you so much. It's great to hear positive feedback like that, and I love hearing stories that we've helped change your diet, and your kids are eating vegetables right out of the garden. That's the best way to get them. Thank you.
Geneva, before you go away, tell us a little bit about the kinds of things that surprised you or that you tasted as a result of participating in this weekly availability of produce program that you'd never tasted before.
Well, the one that pops into my mind, and I laugh because my children love it so much, is arugula. When we started getting the lettuce, which is one of the first things that we will get, you know, in the CSA share, I was like, this is so spicy, I can barely eat it. I just wasn't really even used to my food tasting like anything. You know, sometimes when you get lettuce in the grocery store, it's come a long way to get there, and a lot of times it doesn't have very much flavor, and I just was really taken back by all of the flavor that these greens had, and it actually kind of took me a little while to get used to them, and now I love them, and, you know, and my children, both of my boys, you know, they always ask for the spicy lettuce, and so that was
that
definitely one
wonderful.
Where I wasn't used to my lettuce tasting so good. It just never tasted like anything before.
Well, I think that's, you know, one of the, in our business, that we hear that all the time, that, you know, people say, well, gosh, you know, I didn't know how good this food tasted until I started growing it myself, or, you know, purchasing it from a CSA share like Dave's or at the farmer's market. And it really is, I mean, this is what Tanya Dinklakov's book is all about, reclaiming our food, that not only, you know, are there all these environmental benefits to eating food grown close to home, but there's, you know, all these taste benefits. And I think, you know, I'm involved with a schoolyard garden program in Charlottesville, you know, and people always love to say how that kids hate their vegetables and they're picky eaters. Well, if kids see a vegetable, if they see, you know, a kale growing or beets, they will eat it. And I've seen this happen. I think we have to, you know, kids have very sensitive palates and they know what tastes good. Mm-hmm. And something that's growing fresh, and especially things, and this is germane to our conversation about winter gardening. When cold hardy crops are grown in the cold, they typically taste better, because particularly root crops, because they, in the cold, they store sugars. So this is carrots and beets and turnips. You will have the most amazing root crops if you harvest them over the winter, because all that cold has made them store sugar in their roots. And it's also clearly a sign of increased nutritional value.
Geneva, I'm feeling hungry just listening to you.
And can I say one more thing real quick? I just really, not, you know, I know that sometimes it's faux pas to bring religion into a discussion, but I truly believe that God gave us food to bring us joy. And I believe that our family is finding joy in our food again. And I just think that that's really important to have in your life.
What a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much for your call. Kent in Lexington, we were just about to go to you and we lost your call. Don't know if you had to hang up or there was a problem with your cell phone signal, but if you want to call back, we've got a couple of phone lines available now at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825, not just for Kent, but for anybody else listening who wants to talk with gardening advisors Guinevere Higgins and Dave O'Neill. Susan in Lyndhurst, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Hi, how are you today?
Doing okay. How about yourself?
Oh, wonderful. It's a beautiful day out. I have a question about a rhododendron I have that's a very, very tall, kind of spindly plant. And I'd like to thicken it up, and I don't know when I should cut it back or how far I should cut it back or even if I should cut it back.
You can definitely cut it back. Rhododendrons are very sensitive to soil pH. So if you haven't done a soil test in a while, that would be a good first step. They like acidic soil. They're in the wild, you see them up in the high mountains where there's a lot of leached soil. They like acidic soil. So when you do cut it back, anytime it's dormant, probably from the first frost on, is probably the best time. And you never want to take more than 25% of the rhododendron. So cut it back sparingly and try to do it just above a branching node so that you can encourage more branching so that it'll help it fill out.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much, and I love the show.
Great. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you, Susan. To you listening in, are you the person who once had a garden many years ago, but for some reason had to give it up? Now you find yourself conflicted. You're really drawn to the idea of getting back into gardening, but you've got some basic questions you'd like answered first. 888-WMRA-TALK is our phone number, and all of a sudden we've got several lines open. In all numbers, it translates to 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can reach us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Christine in Harrisonburg, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Guinevere Higgins and or Dave O'Neill, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a baby in the spring in our garden. I'm staring at it right now. The weeds have taken over. And I'd like to get it ready for next season, but I'm not sure what to do in the fall to prepare it. Should I get all these weeds up now? Should I cover it in leaves? These are ideas I've had, but I'm not really sure what to do.
Those are great questions. And that is very much what we are doing right now with our clients and advice we're giving out. So Dave, a minute ago, mentioned soil testing, and the fall is a great time to do a soil test, particularly if you've amended your soil in the past and you kind of want to see how you did and how it...
A soil test involves what?
Okay, so a soil test, you take a sample from your garden beds, and typically, you know, you want to take a composite sample. So you might take soil from one bed and then another bed, and you're going to dig down about 6 inches, mix all those soil samples together in a clean bucket, and you want probably anywhere from 1 to 2 cups worth of soil, and you can send it off to the lab at Virginia Tech. There's any number of soil testing labs.
Do I recall that your favorite place is somewhere near Boston?
Not near Boston, but it is UMass Amherst. That's the lab that we use because they will test for heavy metals. It's another thing if you are gardening in an urban environment, and particularly if you have children or you are a woman of childbearing age, you want to make sure that there's no lead in your soil. But getting back to why take a soil test, a soil test is going to tell you how much organic matter you have in your soil. It's going to give you a nutrient analysis. It'll tell you the pH. And the fall is a really great time to work on your soil because oftentimes, particularly in organic gardening, organic agriculture, soil preparation is essentially what organic gardening is. You want to invest in your soil, and then you'll just naturally yield healthy plants. But oftentimes that takes time, and it's an investment that doesn't happen overnight. So if you prepare now in the fall, come spring, you'll be that much further along as far as getting your gardens planted for next season. So we recommend at this time of year is a great time to add compost to your soil. Dave mentioned cover cropping earlier, and that's a fantastic idea as well. If your soil has a very low pH, now is a good time to add lime, because lime takes 2 to 3 months to bring the soil pH up to a more neutral level. So come spring, you'll be thanking yourself for putting in some work on these beautiful fall days so that you're ready to plant in March and April.
But I think one of the things Christine asked, though, is what does she do about all those weeds?
She's just staring at all these weeds. What should she do?
Oh, well, you definitely want to pull up the weeds. I'm sorry. Sorry, I jumped right to the compost and the soil preparation. But definitely pull up the weeds, because those weeds, they know the cold is coming, so they're trying as fast as they can to create as many seeds as possible. So if you can get those before they go to seed, that would be huge.
The weeds with leaves, not a good idea.
Probably not the best idea. If you can pull them out, that's much better, particularly if they're perennial weeds like poke or, if you don't get them out now, they're just going to come back bigger and better next year. If they don't have weed seeds on them or seed heads on them, you can compost them. They're great organic matter in your compost pile.
A song once claiming you could make a salad out of poke?
There is. Poke is edible early in the spring. I hear you have to like cook it 3 times and it doesn't taste very good.
Christine, does that help? Did you have a follow-up question?
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you really so much for taking
good
the time
luck,
to call
Christine.
In.
And keep that baby in the garden.
That's right.
Sun-warmed tomatoes. Mike in Harrisonburg, thank you for calling us at 888-967-2825. Did that just so anybody just tuned in would know what the number was they could call if they wanted to. But Mike, thanks for joining us. Your question, your comment, please.
I have a comment for the lady that wanted the killer mimosa and all those weed trees.
Uh-huh.
What I've done in the past that's worked is I take it and I cut it down and leave about a 2-foot stump, and then I drill holes in it with my vertical holes with a drill, and then I pour table salt in it.
Huh. And that works for you.
Oh, it worked for me. It killed a mimosa tree that was probably 3 feet in diameter, and I drilled, you know, about 4 or 5 holes in it and poured table salt in it. And then in the spring, I went over and kicked it over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic, Mike.
Yeah, it works.
Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
Thanks, Mike. On Facebook, we have this from Kay, who says, my question is about bedding down the garden perennials and what kind of fall, winter vegetables or herbs I can grow in a raised bed. I use mulch and a light plastic cover. Guinevere, it strikes me that at least part of her question deals with something you started to talk about before, and I promise to get back to.
So, meaning the growing things over the winter.
And the light plastic cover.
And the light oh, of course. So, thinking about season extension. So, at this time of year, if you were smart about, you know, 6 weeks or 8 weeks ago, you would have gotten all your carrots and your beets and your lettuces and everything planted in the ground. And then you'd be starting to think about how you're going to protect those plants from extreme cold temperatures. So row cover and plastic sheeting, as this person is planning to use, are both great season extension devices. They're going to give your plants an additional degree of protection against extreme cold. Be careful with the plastic sheeting, though, because it can heat up dramatically underneath that sheeting, and it also nothing gets watered because plastic is not water penetrable, unlike row cover, which is. So when it rains, your plants are not getting the benefit of that water. So
you recommend something instead?
Well, plastic sheeting is fine if that's what you have. Absolutely use it. Just be sure to make sure that you're allowing your plants some. You want to peel back that plastic sheeting if things, you know, if it gets hot. On a day like today, underneath that plastic sheeting, it'd probably be 100 degrees and your plants will fry. And that can even happen on cold days in the winter when the sun is still really strong.
Would poking holes in it be reasonable, or is that kind of defeat the point?
I think it kind of defeats the purpose. We prefer row cover because most of the things that you're going to grow over the winter in Virginia anyway are pretty darn cold hardy. So kale, you know, lettuces, spinach.
What kind of fall winter vegetables could she grow in that raised bed? Is it too late to plant any of this stuff?
Spinach and lettuce, I'd say you might be able to get away with from seed. Otherwise, plant starts, but don't expect them to harvest them anytime before, I'd say, March or April.
Grow through the winter.
They can grow through the winter. They're not going to do any active growing from about the beginning of December to the end of January. But before that and after that, they will put on growth. But as Dave mentioned earlier, you want to get them ideally to 80% to 90% mature by that first frost date, which who knows when it'll be, but it could be soon.
The man with the hat is sitting there looking at Guinevere with this big smile on. Are you just thinking, she said everything that had to be said, I don't have anything to add?
Yeah, she's got all the information just bubbling up from her in a very, very polite, joyous way.
Well, I have
way.
A small piece of information for anybody listening. All of a sudden, all of our phone lines are open. We're going to be back in just a bit more than 1 minute looking for questions about gardening or success stories about growing stuff. So if you want to call, phone number is 888-967-2825. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Here with me, environmentalist and professional gardener Guinevere Higgins, as well as environmentalist and professional farmer Dave O'Neill. Phone number 888-WMRA. Talk on Facebook. We are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. A few calls back, we had somebody who was wondering if they could discourage weeds by just putting leaves over them. And I think, Guinevere, you were pretty clear that that's really not the best idea. But that got me wondering, this is a time of year when lots of people are cleaning desperately, trying to get rid of all the weeds on their lawn. Where do you come down on this? Is that a necessary thing for, and again, we're talking about lawns now, not about gardens. Or is it possible to just leave the leaves there over the winter and let them sort of build up the soil?
Well, leaves on a lawn, I mean, if you don't care about your lawn, great. But if you do care about your lawn, you do actually want some nice green grass. The leaves aren't going to help you so much, particularly if they end up, you know, in a really deep layer over top of your grass. They're going to kill your grass. However, raking is fantastic exercise. And raking up those leaves and putting them in a pile and maybe running them over with your lawnmower a couple times creates one of the best mulches that you can put either into your garden, your vegetable garden, on your perennial beds, or add to your compost pile and just create additional organic matter. Leaves from oak trees and maple trees in particular are really fantastic, but take all those leaves. That is precious organic matter, and that's going to help build your soil, help protect your plants, help suppress weeds. And if you do care about your lawn, go grab a rake, get some exercise on these beautiful days, and make some soil.
So the whole idea of getting the leaves off of your lawn, good plan, but putting them in a bag and putting them by the edge of for the trash people to pick up, bad idea.
Bad idea.
I wish you could see the facial expressions and the versions of head shaking going on here. 888-967-2825. We've got just a few minutes left to take phone calls if you have any gardening questions. And we've got a couple of phone lines open right now, but one of them is being occupied by Laura in Stanton. Laura, thanks for calling in. Your question, your comment, please.
Yes, I am an eighth grade teacher, and my school is implementing an outdoor classroom. And one of the stations that I would like to set up for my kids is testing soil pH. And I'm curious to know how easily we can test that pH, or is this something we'll need to send off somewhere?
That is a great question, Laura. I don't have any experience with pH testing kits, although I know you can purchase them. I've seen them for sale at Southern States. Mm-hmm. I want to applaud your efforts to take your kids outside and get their hands dirty, because I think that's awesome and I think they're going to like it.
Southern States is a store.
Southern States is a store.
In some parts of our listening area, but maybe not all parts. Are there other stores that...
I mean, a nursery supply store, or, you know, I'm sure that's the kind of thing you could find online. I imagine it's available because it seems so simple. And then, there's always the litmus paper.
Right, which we have litmus, we have pH paper, and basically we would check whether acidic or not, and if we could get an actual acidic reading on the pH is what we, you know, I would hope that they would be able to do. I was just hoping it was simple enough for my eighth graders to be able to, so.
One idea would be to do those tests from the kit and the litmus paper, and also send your soil samples away to Virginia Tech, and then you can get kind of a baseline reading of how accurate, you know, your kit is compared to the Virginia Tech test.
Okay.
That would be...
Laura, can you tell us a little bit more about the program that's going on? I assume it's somewhere in the Stanton School District?
It's in Augusta County School District. And
which school are you at?
I'm at Beverly Manor Middle School.
Okay. And you're getting your kids to grow things, or...?
Basically, the outdoor classroom has many setups. We can use it as a science space if we want, and that's where, of course, the soil pH will come in. We can use it in life science as far as how the forests regenerate themselves once they've been cut, you know, what types of trees grow where as far as shade and sunlight and those types of things. But we can also use the outdoor classroom. We've got a pavilion we're going to set up just to have outdoor seating, to take your kids outside and do a math lesson, a history lesson, whatever it may be. We've got an ag department at our school, so they'll be, of course, be doing forestry projects and those types of things.
Laura, thanks so much for taking the time to call us.
Thank you.
Talking about schools, Ms. Higgins, and it's still Higgins, even despite the change in personal status of just a few weeks ago. You raced back from your honeymoon just so that you could be here with us. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Did you know there's a story about when Dave O'Neill got married a few years ago, what he did on his wedding day?
What'd you do, Dave?
Well,
can you tell it?
Yeah, yes, I can tell this one at least. On my wedding day, before I was married, I went and did the Harrisonburg Farmers Market and sold vegetables that morning.
What a guy.
And what did your wife, Lee, say?
Well, she said she wasn't coming to the market with me. And I said, well, why not? She said, well, it's my wedding day. And I'm like, it's my wedding day, too. And I'm going to market. But she wanted to rest.
And she married you anyway.
And you're still married.
Yes, that was 11 years ago.
And you just farming.
You just got married 3 weeks ago.
I did.
But it's still Higgins.
Still Higgins.
So, Guinevere Higgins, this program that you're involved with in Charlottesville with schools encouraging what about local food?
It's called the City Schoolyard Garden, and we are a small nonprofit organization. We're sponsored by the local food hub in Charlottesville, and we have a pilot program at Buford Middle School, which is the 7th and 8th grade middle school in Charlottesville. Every 7th and 8th grader in a public school system in Charlottesville will come to that school, and we have a thriving 50-foot by 100-foot garden there, and it's an outdoor garden classroom. The plants grown there are grown as teaching tools, and right now the 7th graders at that school are getting ready to conduct their a science experiment to test the scientific method, and they're using that garden to actually as a laboratory. We have language classes that come out there. We have an after-school program in both gardening and cooking, so the kids kind of get the whole life cycle of, okay, we grow these plants from seed, and then we raise them up, and we weed them, and we fertilize them, and then we eat them in delicious ways. So it's a really successful program. We've been really well-funded and well-supported in the Charlottesville area, and I'll encourage folks, if you're interested in learning more about the City Schoolyard Garden program, you can visit our fantastic and beautiful new website, cityschoolyardgarden.org. You can also come out to the second annual Buford Middle School Harvest Festival, which is this Friday evening from 5:30 to 7:30. There will be free food. There will be games for kids. There will be garden tours. There will be a fantastic live band. I'm a little biased because it's my husband's band, but they really are fun, the Downbeat Project. And it's free and it's fun for kids, and we hope you'll come.
So we just got this post on Facebook that's sort of related. This is from Sharon, who says, I was listening to your show while pickling pears from a friend's yard. Mm. The comment about children eating reminded me of my daughter coming home from preschool saying she did not have enough fresh beets in her lunch. I asked how many she needed, and she said, enough for everyone. She said she had rolled the beets down the table, and everyone had a bite and wanted more, so we planted more.
Great story.
There's also something that you're doing, trying to get more local food into schools.
Yeah, that's an initiative. It's, there's a lot of interest in Charlottesville in local food, and there's a lot of interest in sort of how do we address, food, the inequities that exist in how people can access quality, fresh food. And of course, there are a significant number of students in our city schools that are on free and reduced lunch. And so that provides a really incredible opportunity to get kids eating really healthy local produce. And so, there's a number of us in Charlottesville that are working to improve school food, which includes folks who actually are working on the front lines of the school food, meaning the nutrition services folks, and they're working with us. And so it's exciting. There's a lot of room for growth and opportunity.
Dave O'Neill, we're going to toss this one to you. This is on Facebook from Terry, who says, where can I get a lazy person's mushroom log? Like, no work.
That's,
is this doable?
Sure. Lazy person's mushroom log probably means one that's already been inoculated with the spawn and basically is ready to be soaked and or just left out in the rain so that it'll fruit. And there's lots of sources. Sometimes there's mushroom folks at the city market in Charlottesville. There's also mushroom.
Sharondale Farm in Keswick, Virginia. They're a local farm to us in Charlottesville. And Mark Jones has mushrooms you've never heard of before, but they're all delicious.
Exactly.
So. You can even if you're feeling lazy, you can inoculate your own logs. It's not that hard if you've got a drill. And there's a great catalog called Fungi Perfecti.
This is coming from a woman who came back from her honeymoon after 2.5 days so she could work in people's gardens some more. Your gauge, Ms. Higgins, of what is hard work and what others people gauge might be a little bit different.
Well, if you can operate a hand-powered drill, and you can daub a log with wax, you can probably inoculate your own mushroom logs, because that's pretty much all there is to it. And there's a great source on the internet, Fungi Perfecti. I don't know their web address, but you can Google them, and they've got everything you need to get your own mushroom log started. And I've got to say, we have some mushroom logs at home. They're growing nuts because we've had so much rain. We've had fantastic mushrooms.
Mr. Higgins, before we run out of time, and I should let the audience know that the 888-WMRA talk, all of our lines are open. We might have time for one more call if you were to dial in right now with a question or comment about gardening. But David, you've got something going on with JMU, and
oh, yeah.
Is your picture or something on the JMU homepage now?
We JMU does this.
James Madison University, for anybody driving through.
Yes, they do a great series called Be the Change, and right now they're featuring Radical Roots Farm. They have a big color spread and a nice article, as well as a whole slideshow video about our farm. It features, you know, air photos, as well as a lot of close-ups of how
so,
we grow
so
food.
So why is James Madison University celebrating your farm, Radical Roots Community Farm?
My wife and I are both alumni. We graduated there in the 90s. And I guess our farm is a model for sustainability. And JMU is really trying to celebrate that. So we're happy to collaborate with them and spread the word in that way.
So if anybody wanted more information about your farm, in addition to going to the Virginia Insight webpage where they would find links to it, they can now just Google James Madison University and end up at JMU's homepage.
And we're right on the homepage.
And you're right on the homepage.
Awesome.
Okay, so do I have time to ask this next question, or are we going to get... Because there are a couple of people competing to get in as our last call, but neither call is ready yet. So let me ask you about whether there are any particular critters or pests that are especially difficult this time of year, or if, as the cold comes in, you get rid of the insect problems.
Well, that's one of the nice things about growing things in the cold season is you don't have as many pest problems as you have in the summer. That said, the cabbage worms are definitely going strong on all of our cole crops. So, you know, kale, broccoli, that kind of thing. Aphids, too, tend to like those crops at this time of year. But that's, again, where your row cover comes in handy, because you can cover those plants and actually provide a physical barrier to keep the pests from getting in. But over the winter, I mean, it's amazing. The other cool thing about growing things over the winter is plants are a really fantastic barometer of the weather. So they will tell you, you know, all of a sudden, like, your arugula, which kind of looked like it might be kind of dying off in January, all of a sudden, it's like 18 inches tall. And that's as sure a sign as you can get that spring is coming. That plant knows. So I encourage people to, you know, next July, start thinking about your fall garden, because it's a really fun and worthwhile thing to do with it's a lot less labor intensive.
Brittany in Stanton, I think you're going to be our last call this hour. Thanks so much for calling in. Your question or comment for Dave O'Neill and or Guinevere Higgins, please.
Okay, thank you very much. My question is for Guinevere. I was wondering if the gardening programs at schools could become big enough and successful enough in order to provide the schools with fresh produce.
That's a great question, and we certainly absolutely want to encourage kids to be eating food out of the garden. That said, they are educational gardens. They're not necessarily production gardens, although, you know, we'd love to see some token items maybe on the school salad bar. So they're small, and the idea is really to get kids to learn from growing things there, not necessarily to provide, you know, say all the tomatoes that a cafeteria is going to go through in a particular season. That said, I wouldn't rule that out as far as maybe at the high school level, where kids are maybe looking for a slightly more, you know, they're looking to actually kind of be those future farmers. Whereas in the middle school, at the middle school level, we're really looking to just kind of engage kids in an outdoor classroom, get them working with their hands.
Brittany, thanks so much for your call. Before we go, Dave O'Neill, is there something called a reaping program, or am I getting that wrong?
The gleaning program.
Gleaning program.
Yeah, we have gleaners that come after the city market in Charlottesville, and they collect any vegetables that we didn't sell, that we can't store. They'll collect them and then distribute them to homeless or needy people.
Since we haven't had a frost yet, you've got a whole bunch of produce still growing at your farm, and you're ready to wrap up for vacation in a couple of weeks.
We wind up at the end of October, and we haven't had a frost yet. So,
is there a possibility at a farm like yours of having a gleaning program where people come in and finish off what's still growing?
Sometimes we do have volunteers come out, and you know, they'll, like this time of the year, we have lots of extra green peppers, more than we can ever know what to do with. So we can donate those to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank or to some of the different food like pantries in Harrisburg, Patchwork Pantry.
So you have volunteers come in, they pick what's left over, they may keep some for themselves, and they give it away to good causes.
Sure. It's a great program, and I think we need more of it.
Absolutely.
I think there's opportunities there for more gleaning, more volunteer groups and networks of gleaning.
Our guests have been Guinevere Higgins, professional gardening advisor and co-owner of the Charlottesville-based consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest, as well as Dave O'Neill, organic farming specialist and co-owner of the Radical Roots Community Farm in Keeseltown. Thank you both for making time for us. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you can find links to more information about both of our guests. Plus, if you go to Virginia Insight's Facebook page and click like, you'll have access to a whole bunch more information about our broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.